Hi, everybody. For those of you who don't know us, we're sisters, Amy and Nancy Harrington, the founders of the Passionistas Project. We've created an inclusive sisterhood where passion-driven women come to get support, find their purpose, and feel empowered to transform their lives and change the world. On every episode, we discuss the unique ways in which each woman is following her passions, talk about how she defines success, and explore her path to breaking down the barriers that women too often face. If you're old enough like us, chances are you grew up watching the new Zoo Review. The show was syndicated from 1972 to 1977, and episodes ran well into the 1990s with 3 million viewers per season in its heyday. After 50 years and 40 years out of the public eye, they are back. The show was the brainchild of Doug Mommery, who, along with his wife, Emmy Jo, created The Answer to Sesame Street, focusing on relationships and feelings. Doug wrote every song and storyline for the 550 plus shows. So if you're joining us live here today, feel free to drop comments or questions for our very, very, very special guests in the chat, and we'll do our best to get them answered. So please welcome Doug and Emmy Jo. We could not be more excited to have you both on the show today.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We are very excited.
We love to talk about what happened 50 years ago.
That's amazing, isn't it? It can't possibly be that long.
Oh, yes.
Love to just ask every guest who comes on the show to start. What are you most passionate about?
Well, I think I'm passionate about many, many things. But I am most passionate about my children and grandchildren and my faith. And I guess the next on the list, I guess I would have to include our animals. We live on a little farm, and I'm passionate about Jenna.
Oh, that's
I don't want to leave him out.
good. And I'm passionate about really all those things, raising our family and being with the kids and everything and grandkids and watching them grow and develop. But I'm also passionate still about composing music and writing and being creative. I just don't think there's an age limit to that. And so I'm very thankful that we're still able to be creative and reach out to people.
So let's talk about the origins of that creativity. Tell us, both of you, tell us about your childhoods, where you grew up, and was creativity something that was always a part of your life and encouraged by your parents?
Well, I was always interested in the theater. I grew up in Texas, and from the time I was a young teenager, I was in a teen theater company in Dallas, and it was a very big part of my life, and I didn't know where to go with it. But when I was in college, majoring in theater at SMU, ABC Television did a nationwide search for 17 students, I think it was 17, to be given a full scholarship to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York City. And it was just a dream. I thought they wouldn't pick me. I mean, there were many, 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 many that everybody was auditioning, but I went through all of the auditions, and lo and behold, I won a scholarship. And my parents thankfully allowed me to go to New York, and I spent 3 years there. And it was just amazing. And it was a big adventure in my life. And then I had promised them that I would come back and finish college. So I came back to SMU.
Wait, before that, I've got to brag on you. She won the Helen Hayes Award for Best Actress, and she actually was in a couple plays on Broadway. I mean, she did the audition route and the agent route, and it was difficult.
It was difficult, and I didn't really know where I was going to go with it, but I did want to finish college. So I came back, and oh my goodness, SMU has, I guess they still have, an incredible theater program. And I was invited to go to California for summer stock, and I had two wonderful roles, Portia in The Merchant of Venice, And Nancy, you had a theater company. That I'm very impressed with that in Boston. So you know that role. And Masha in The Three Sisters. And we were directed by one of the great female directors ever, Alvina Krauss. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's been gone for many years, but she was tough, but she was wonderful and just knew how to get great performances out of everybody. But anyway, that's where I met Doug because he was
there. Well, I'll back up. And my history is theater as well. In high school, I designed sets and finally got into acting and writing. And I was very passionate about that, but I was also passionate about playing football. So I was kind of a kid with a foot in theater and a foot on the athletic
basketball.
Field. Basketball. So, but as it turned out, that summer, I too was invited to summer stock. And that's where I met Emily. And but before that, though, I was actually a children's theater director for the city of Whittier, California. And that's where I kind of got a love of kids and writing for kids, because I would do my own version of Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and, wrote the music for those little plays. And I just really enjoyed that, not knowing that I was going to do this for a living later on. But anyway, we met in Santa Maria and it was...
I fell in love with his music because I would go into the music department to work on my lines. And I would hear this wonderful music with, his adult songs. And I peeked in there and I said, do you mind if I come in and listen? And he said, no. So I'd come in and listen. And then, we got along very well. And then I found out that he was getting up at 5 a.m. to play basketball. And that was very impressive to me. I come from a real sports oriented family. We just fell in love, and a year and a half later, we were married and came back from our wedding to do the pilot for New Zoo Review. So it was.
But that was an adventure. How the pilot got on. I don't know if you're interested in that, but that was amazing. Just somehow inspired. My mom worked at a toy store in Whittier, California, and the owner of the toy store had a beanbag frog, and she asked my mom, she said, do you know of anybody that can help me? I want to do a kid's show. I have some contacts, and I just want to do a kid's show. And my mom, being a great mom, said, well, wait, my son is a major in playwriting at Cal State Fullerton. Maybe he can help. So I arranged a meeting with her, and she said, look, I have one request. You use this frog, this beanbag frog. Can you create a show for me? I said, well, I've wanted to do Broadway, but this is maybe the closest I'm ever going to be, because you know how hard it is in entertainment to get anywhere, especially if your dad is not, he's an insurance salesman. So anyway, I went home that night, wrote the theme song, sketched out the set, the characters, and actually had Charlie the giraffe first, but that's another story. And I went to Emily and I said, hey, do you want to be in a kid's show?
Sure.
Okay.
So, sounds good to me.
So I took it into Barbara and showed it to her. She said, I really love this. I really like this. I think you've got something here. And so she arranged a live audition with my guitar, myself, Emmy Jo, for the owners of Mattel Toys in Hawthorne, California. And we went into a darkened theater, and there was all the executives and the owners of Mattel Toys, and they said, show us what you got. So I played Freddie and Henrietta in my falsetto voice. And Emmy Jo played herself.
And Charlie.
And I had written 3 episodes and like 12 songs and played all the songs for the executives. And we were just rocking and rolling, just thinking we did a good job. And there was no reaction at all. I mean, none. So they said, thank you very much. We'll we'll get in touch with you. So we went back to our normal lives.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, they were building the set on a soundstage in Hollywood. And we were doing the pilot right after we got married. Yeah. So that's how it was born.
So how did it go from Mattel saying no to doing the pilot? What happened there?
Well, you know, at that time, there was a lot of pressure on toy companies because TV was inundated with, you know, those kind of things where they were selling toys. They weren't really doing anything to better kids, you know. So this was an image, I think, a conscious image thing for Mattel. Mm-hmm. So they backed the show. They the first season, they were our sponsor.
Yeah.
And this was great for them, and it was great for us because it gave us an opportunity. And so we went into production, and it was an amazing, wonderful experience.
That's awesome. I just want to say we have tons of people tuning in, and we have people from Texas. We have Tammy from Texas, and Lisa from Florida, and Lisa from Tahunga, California, and Greg from West Virginia, and everybody's just so excited that you're here.
Oh, wow.
Lisa says, God bless the beanbag frog. So if anybody's listening and they have a question, definitely drop it in the comment, and we will work that into the conversation. So you shoot the pilot, and they pick up the show. Tell us about designing the characters and building those characters. How did that process work?
Well, I wasn't a part of that. I was the actress on the show. I have to say, Doug is the creative guy. I didn't have anything to do with the actual creating
of
the show.
But you have to admit, I showed you things and you said, oh, I don't think I like
well,
that.
Well, I did. I gave opinions.
And very
that's a huge part of the creative process. That's
yes.
That's,
yeah.
So that was very much a part of it because, yeah. You know, you and me, we kind of did this together.
We did it all completely together. But I'm just saying, I don't want to take credit for something that he did.
Thank you. But
I was thrilled to be an actress on the show and to work with the cast that we had. I mean, it was just fabulous.
Well, the way the costumes were built, I decided on a Charlie the Owl instead of a giraffe because, you know, the limitations of a soundstage, that was going to be weird. So we decided on an owl, and I really wanted the personalities of the characters to reflect kids. You know, like Freddy the Frog was our little boy who was mischievous and curious and was into everything. And then Henrietta was a Southern Belle who was polite and refined. And you don't find many hippos like that. And Charlie was the know-it-all. And, you know, the crux of every problem was almost going back to him because he knew it all. And we all know people like these three people. And then Emmy Jo and I were, you know, the zookeepers, basically. I mean, we were the ones that tried to guide them and to help them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times they would help us and guide us.
Absolutely.
So we wanted that to be real, and those personalities and the exchanges between the characters and the songs, I wanted not to talk down to kids, but to talk to kids mm-hmm. and have them relate to that. And so we had Sid and Marty Croft. Are you familiar with them? They built our costumes. And it was a wonderful process because we got to go in there and I got to say, hey, put a little more smile on Freddie. And, you know, Charlie needs to have this kind of look about him. And Henrietta, just her head went through a lot of changes. But mm-hmm. she was so they brought those costumes to life. And that was just a thrill to work with them and their, you know, puppeteers over there.
And it was really exciting because Doug and I were two green kids.
Yeah.
We didn't really know anything except about our his life, you know, with doing shows at college and stuff, and all my work that I had done on the stage. But this was completely different, and
it was a little education.
Intimidating, but it was so fun.
Because, you know, in theater, as you know, you're playing to the back of the house. You've got to mm-hmm. be larger than life. Well, all of a sudden, you're in front of a camera. And I didn't know to let the camera do the work initially. Neither did Emmy Jo, you know. So we had to learn that craft of being on TV. And that was a whole different learning process. But it was just wonderful. It really was. We had great people.
Oh, my goodness.
The voiceover talent, the dancers, the musicians that I got to work with in the studio recording the songs. So it was just amazing.
That's incredible. I love that saying, you know, you learned as you go. I think sometimes creatively it's better if you don't know what you're doing, because I think that's when the magic happens. You're not constricted by what everyone thinks you should be doing, right?
Here we were, you know, in our 20s, and we thought we knew it all. I mean, believe me, I was confident enough to, yeah, I can do that. I mean, I have that.
It's good. That was good. We were both very confident. We just threw ourselves into it. But we were so blessed to have these wonderful professionals, so experienced, to help us. And our cast was amazing. I mean, my favorite character in the show is Henrietta Hippo. And I love all of them, but she's my favorite. And I love her because she's confident in herself, and she's larger than life. And I couldn't wait to do scenes in her house. But Henrietta Hippo, the person, the dancer in the costume, was Larry Thomas, one of the great dancers in Hollywood. We've seen her in many old shows and in movies. And Hazel Shermont was the voice, and Hazel was extremely experienced with her, is a voiceover talent. And they were all so helpful to me, coming from someone who'd never used a cue card, didn't understand. It's just so different from when you're in a theater. And I had a lot to learn. And they were kind and never made me feel inexperienced. They were very supportive. And we all became very, very close. And just this fall, we were in Philadelphia, and we saw Sharon Baird, who was the dancer inside of Charlie the Owl. So that was quite a reunion after 50 years to see Sharon.
And Sharon was an original Mouseketeer.
Yes.
She was Sharon, little Sharon and Cubby. I don't know if you were.
I used to watch Sharon on the Mickey Mouse Club.
I did
so
too.
I felt like she was a big celebrity.
Yeah, she was. So, and she was an expert dancer. I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
You know. And then Freddie the Frog was I think he was from Argentina.
I think Yanko was from Argentina.
Yeah,
but sure.
Yanko Ioni. And he was a wonderful dancer, really made that frog come to life. I mean, it was amazing because the frog had to change hands and then work the mouth with his other hand. So he seamlessly went back and forth doing that. I just was amazed at how he brought that character to life.
That's amazing. Yeah, it wouldn't have occurred to me that there were dancers inside of the suit. Like I in my head, I picture like big, strong people who have to carry the weight of the suit, and dancers obviously have the strength, but they also have the grace, right?
Yes. And that's that they had to have those kind of moves because our choreographer was wonderful. I don't know if you know Anita Mann. She did she's still active. I mean, doing choreography she gave us all the dance moves. I wasn't a dancer, but you were. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. One of us could do some steps. But working in a limited space with huge costumes just the technical side of things, we didn't sync it in post-production. It was all done live. We had playback of a pre-recorded track to the soundstage. And the minute the characters heard their voice, they were lip syncing. Mm-hmm. The minute we heard our voice, we were lip syncing. And then they would crossfade to live audio on the stage. So it was all done live.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm just processing that in my head. We actually did a 3-hour interview with Anita Mann for the Television Academy probably 5 years ago now.
Yeah. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
She's
Did she admit that she did New Zoo?
Oh, yeah.
We talked to her about it.
Proudly.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, another really iconic part of the show is the theme song, which I think even if people don't remember the show, they know the song. So tell us about writing that song.
Well, thank you. As a composer, you don't know whether the song is going to, you know, be good or not. And when I was sitting on my floor with my guitar playing it and saying, well, you know, every day is a different show. Okay. You know, with Freddie, Charlie, Henrietta, you know, they have fun learning what they don't. You don't know if those words are just, are they trite? Are they, you know, but it just clicked. And we went into the studio, recorded it, and we got so many letters and fan mail and things by saying either they hated it because they didn't want to hear it or they loved it. And most of them loved it. But, you know, a lot of moms said, if I hear that song one more time, I'm going to throw something at the TV. But most of the kids just loved it. And when we were in San Diego doing Comic-Con and Philadelphia, we got to do a panel in Philadelphia. And I brought my guitar and we sang the song and everybody was singing along.
Everybody sang with us. It was fun.
It was great.
Well, ever since publicist Danny approached us about doing this interview, it's been in our head. So it's a great song. And it's unshakable once you get it. It's like, oh, yeah, it's in my head again. So we have a question from someone that's watching. Cindy Yarborough Hathcote wants to know, how long did it take for hair and makeup for each of you?
To do hair and makeup?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
You remember that. We had to be in makeup at 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I don't remember how long it took, but yeah, because a lot of time I wore falls, you know, and they had to put that in. And I had one awful experience because I'm not an early riser by nature. And there was a time change, and Doug, you know, he said ready to go to the set at like 5 a.m, but I wasn't. And I just forgot about the time change. And I showed up at the studio and I noticed that my hair and makeup person were standing at the outside door. And I thought, well, that's odd. And I just walked in. I said, huh? And they sort of were moving me towards the makeup chair. And I said, what's going on? What's happening? And then I don't remember which one, but somebody leaned down and said, you're an hour late. And I just was, I still remember how embarrassed I was because, you know, time is money. And I thought, gosh, I'm going to be fired. But nothing happened. But that was, I think, the only time my whole life for any kind of a professional thing, I was late. It just doesn't happen.
But nobody cared. It was fine.
I cared.
She was Emmy Jo. Come on.
I cared. Oh, my goodness. It was mortifying.
That's excellent.
It didn't take long for me to get makeup.
Yeah. How long did it take? The puppets must have took a little while for them to get into their costumes. And was it the kind of costumes they were sort of in all day? And
you know, anytime they did a dance number, they had to have a break because those costumes were so heavy. And for example, Henrietta Hippo, her songs, if you watch her songs, or when she throws a temper tantrum and sings a song about it, there's so much energy. I mean, she could do things in that costume that were just amazing. But then you have to take a break, take the head off. And there was Larry just, you know, just dripping with perspiration, and just give her a break. And then she'd get right back in. And it was very, very difficult. But she was so skillful. There was an episode that you were giving to Joanna the other day, and it was a song where Henrietta was an artist. She was painting, and she was really painting. She had a real brush, and she would look into the paint can, and she had to look all the way over so she wouldn't tip the paint can over. And in that costume, I mean, it's amazing.
I'll tell you, we had a director that wanted to do everything live. Yeah. I mean, we had three cameras, and he was cutting the show live. So he thought, wow, this is great. Let's do a 5-minute number and dialogue on the front and back of the song, all in one take. And we're going, wait, these people need a break. Because, you know, in the summer with the lights and everything. But to their credit, we did a lot of that in one take. Mm-hmm. Very, very little editing after the fact.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever have any mishaps, any memorable things that went wrong?
We sure did. I did. It wasn't really a mishap, but you know, those skirts were really short. You know, when our daughters were growing up, we had the fingertip test for them, but I didn't have the fingertip test. It's like these little short skirts. And I'll tell you something, to be perfectly honest, they were a size too small for me. They were sample sizes. So I wore what I was given to wear. And there was this, I had to be really careful how I sat. Yeah, I had dance pants on underneath, but still they were short. And there was one show, I don't remember which show it was, but they had a live chicken. And I had to sit on a bench with slats. The bench had slats, and do the scene. And there was this chicken running around. I was so worried that chicken was going to get me. I just knew it.
There was a lot of mishaps where Henrietta would go to sit down and the chair was not there.
Oh, or bless her heart. She would sit down and she would just kind of topple over, and we'd all help get her back up again.
Take two.
Goodness. Oh my goodness. So how did you arrive at the topics for each episode? I assume it. A timeline. You had just gotten married, so you were doing the show before you had children of your own. So talk about that process of writing for kids and how you arrived at the different topics.
Well, remember I told you about the city of Whittier, that I was a children's theater director there. And so I got to know kids pretty well and did several years of that. But I just felt that we needed to tackle subjects that weren't tackled on Sesame Street. I mean, Sesame Street was 1, 2, 3, ABC, you know, let's learn to read. And they were very quick, you know, quick cuts and, you know, where the attention span was not great. I wanted to kind of slow things down and get into some character development and also, speak to kids about what they're going through. Mm-hmm. So, we did a show on telling the truth, greed, being yourself. We even did a show on Shakespeare. I mean, I just wanted to tackle those subjects that weren't, being tackled anywhere else, really. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting getting those through the sponsors sometimes. Like the show on greed, I wrote a song where I wanted Charlie to sing, "I Got What I Need." Well, I had to run the scripts by Mattel. We were at the meeting, they said, what about this song? We're a toy company. What do you mean you got what you need? They need the thing. And I said, look, they want the cardboard box more than they want your toy. I mean, I was, but we got it on and we had a lot of battles, but they let the song go. And it's in the show called Greed. And Charlie sings, "I Got What I Need."
Great way to win that battle. Good for you. So talk about the songs, because you wrote an incredible amount of music for the show. Talk about your creative process in writing, and how did you just keep the ideas flowing?
Well, it was, I can tell you, it wasn't me. I think it was the Holy Spirit, honestly, kind of writing through me, because I had no lessons, really. I was self-taught on the guitar and the piano, and I always wanted to do musical comedy. I wanted the songs to further the action, like, you know, Sondheim and Bernstein and all the greats, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein. And so that was my inspiration, because the characters inspired me to write the song for them. Mm-hmm. And so during the summer, she kept the coffee going. Yeah. And I would be in the studio playing all the songs and the voices. And I had my four-track recorder, and I would record the composition as soon as I composed it. And it was really cool, because I got to write the story that the songs fit into. So mm-hmm. it was kind of a wonderful thing mm-hmm. to do, you know, that old standby book, music and lyrics by. I got that credit, and it was just really just a blessing. It really was. And then we got to work with great musicians.
Yeah.
Our guitarist was Del Catcher. He invented the wah-wah pedal and the fuzz tone guitar. We recorded at his studio. And then we had musicians like Hal Blaine, you know, the drummer. He played on a lot of our tracks. And I didn't know hardly any of these people, but come to find out, they were just top of the line studio musicians.
And what about Milton?
Oh yeah.
And Milton then, Green, he was the musical director for Fiddler on the Roof yeah. on Broadway. And he had been, we did Carousel at the American Academy. He was our music director.
Yeah.
And I was playing Carrie Pipperidge, and I got to be friends with Milton, and it was wonderful, because, oh my goodness, he would get me in to see Fiddler, and then he invited me out to his home, and I met his wife and family and stuff. But then when we needed a musical director, I don't remember why, but I remember saying, why don't we call Milton? And by golly, he came out.
He moved out to LA to do our show. Yeah. So here we were, having an actual Broadway musical director who did the arrangements for us. And it was just magical. It really mm-hmm. was, because he was able to take my songs and my chicken scratching and you know, characterizations that were on tape and bring it to life, you know?
Wow. And for people who don't know, Hal Blaine was part of the Wrecking Crew and worked with the Beach Boys and Phil Spector. And I mean, he was the drummer for decades. He was the guy.
The drummer, exactly.
That's amazing.
Wow. Can you imagine him playing on a kid show? But he kind of loved it. He loved it.
And the songs are great, you know? It doesn't matter if they're written for kids or adults. It's great music. It's great music, right?
Well, we enjoyed it, believe me. We did two albums for Disney. That was fun. I don't remember, but it was fun.
We got to go to the White House twice. That was pretty special.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, we went one year. I think the first year was for Mrs. Nixon did a Christmas.
Oh, first was the summer one, or the Easter.
That was, well, I guess the first one was the Easter egg roll.
Yeah, I think so.
And one of the girls, I guess it was Trisha, mm-hmm. hosted that. And it was really fun. I mean, we were the only act, and we were there on the White House lawn. And then they invited us back for Mrs. Nixon's Christmas party that she gave for the children of the foreign diplomats. And so I would say that those two things were real high points. I mean, just couldn't even believe that we were in the White House, and especially for me, the Christmas one, because, oh, it's just decorated so beautifully, and it's so amazing to be there.
Yeah, we were 500 kids in the East Room of the White House, and we had all of the characters.
Yeah.
I mean, and we pre-recorded a show, but Emmy Jo and I were live with my guitar. So we kind of did a mix of live and tape for the voices and the dancers, and it was just magic. It was, we just had a great time. And now the, you know, the Easter egg role now is just packed full of every character you can possibly imagine. Well, back then it was just us. We were, you know, just thrilled to be the only act.
And, you know, we didn't think about at the time, I mean, we felt like we were hopefully teaching some good lessons about kindness and sensitivity to children and entertaining them, giving them a good time. But we didn't realize that it was having the impact that it has had since our daughter started this Facebook page, and people just come out of the woodwork, and we're meeting our new zoo kids like you girls. And it's just, it's very emotional for me to see what the show has meant to so many children. I'm glad that we've had this opportunity, because I see, because you're right, we didn't have children at the time. And that everything that is said to a child or every experience they have goes into this little computer. And it's there. It's there forever, good and bad. And it's important that they be things that are, that speak of kindness and gentleness.
Yeah, and love.
So that's kind of off the subject, but I remember thinking that at the, not exactly that, but when we were up there for that Christmas show, that it's amazing. These children don't even, most of them speak English, but they were responding, and there was a connection. And now I think I understand it a little bit better.
Yeah, it was, it's been amazing to see the reaction to the show mm-hmm. all these years later, because, you know, for like 40 years, I was, I opened a production company in Las Vegas and was doing behind the scenes. I was doing commercials for the city, for hotels, for, you know, healthcare industry and all kinds of things. And Emmy Jo was doing the books for the company, and was also, you got your master's in marriage and family mm-hmm. counseling.
Yeah. And you know, raising our kids. And we were just in a different place and had no idea. That wasn't until our daughter a year ago.
Yeah, it's been a year.
Well, it was a year ago, last New Year's Eve, just came over and said, you know, Mom and Dad, I think you need a Facebook page. I think she wanted, Doug never really got the appreciation that he should have gotten for all those songs. We were pretty tightly controlled in those years. We didn't really have any real protection. And so our daughter, for her daddy, decided we need to do this. And I had mixed feelings about it. Do we want to come back? Could we? I don't know. It's been a lot of years, but I'm so glad we did. It's you know, she did a wonderful thing. Yeah. And she's pretty well known, because everybody knows that when we do our live events and our stuff, sometimes I try to talk her into being on camera with us, because she's got the real personality.
Oh yeah,
our JoJo.
And it was, you know, we kind of not forgot about the show, but it was just something we did back then, and then to bring it back, it's been humbling to know that people still know the theme song. And they even remember different episodes, and it influenced people. And that's the power of television. It has the power to either for good or not. And I'm just thankful that we were able to do something that had a positive impact.
And, you know, there are children that have, you know, like y'all, and are just, they have these wonderful childhoods, and they're just, everything's great. There are other children who had challenging home lives, very, very difficult circumstances. And, well, one man came up to me. He was a big, burly. He was one of our personal parents, this big, burly guy. He had chains on, and he looked pretty tough. And he comes up, and he's got big tears in his eyes. And he said, I'm not in jail. I'm not in prison. And he said, you kept me out. I'm not in prison because of, and it was, you know, one man wrote in, I mean, The comments are really interesting. If you get on that Facebook page, you start reading what people say, that they would wait until their dad or mom or both of them left so that, and this, just the other day, somebody wrote in and said this was the one bright spot in a very sad childhood. That just breaks my heart. And that is part of the, when you're talking about what we're passionate about, I'm passionate about loving our Nusu children that have grown up. And it's so, I can't even begin to tell you, I'm tearing up right now thinking about how rewarding it is to see what these kids have done. Like, look what you all have done, going from entertainment, being a designer, theater company, and now doing this wonderful podcast. And we have teachers, a lot of educators, librarians, law enforcement, people in
doctors.
Music, and have grown up really well. And as far as I can see, making just wonderful contributions to their communities. So this is a new phase for us, but it's lots of fun.
Well, I just want to jump in and say that it's been a long time, obviously, since we've seen the show and we've been watching clips and being reminded of how great you are. But just talking to the two of you, I remember why, as a kid, I loved it, because you are so warm and you are just, I lean in when you're talking, because I feel like you're, you are talking to me right now, but I also know you're talking to everybody that's listening. And I know they probably feel the same way. Like, I just feel like so connected to you, and you're just both so loving and wonderful. And that's what I felt as a kid. And to feel it now is just really, it's really powerful. So, you know, it means a lot to have you here.
That means so much to us, because really what you see is what you get. I mean, we're older now, but we still have that same passion and that same love.
And I'm actually watching the two of you thinking to myself, they have such beautiful smiles. I think it's mutual for sure.
Thank you. All right, Nan, it's your turn to ask a question. I've been monopolizing.
No problem at all. So we want you back. Can you come back? Do you think about doing the show again, bringing it back, maybe bringing your daughter on, younger generation?
On your show?
The general public want the news interview to come back.
I think it's time for it to come back, definitely. And we've had a tremendous response of people that want it back. I don't know how that's going to happen, but...
Well, we've explored, you know, a reboot, and maybe that's animation. I don't know if you go on our Facebook page. I met a wonderful animator through the Facebook page. Actually, he did a little animation of Freddie and Charlie, and I got in touch with him, and he said, "I'd love to do something." And I said, "Well, let's animate the theme song." And so he did, I think, a charming rendition of the theme song, the whole theme song, just, you know, the original, but with 2D animated characters. And
it's precious. Oh my gosh, I love it. Everybody loves it. When we're done with this, I'm gonna call Joanna and tell her to get that back.
Well, no, I can send it to him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can send it to
you
him.
Can send it. But you it's can, so cute.
Yeah, but that's one way we're thinking of doing it. And the cool thing about that is we could actually use the original soundtracks, you know, and just have it out there for the kids that love animation. And then we also, you know, we rebuilt the costumes, because the original costumes were lost in a fire in Hollywood, along with the set and everything else, and her boots.
My boots are
not the boots.
But, forever.
So I'm meticulously had the costumes rebuilt, you know, from, we didn't have any drawings even, but we had them rebuilt from, you know, still shots from the show and all that. And we had a wonderful costume company that were very, very true to the characters. So we have all those three characters, and we, you know, we may be doing a live action version again. Now, we would just probably guest star as granny and granddad. I don't know. You know, there
we
might be
cameos.
Yeah, there might be a new Doug and Emmy Joe for sure. But we're looking at that because I think, you know, the way the world is going now, we kind of need this this kind of positive energy out there, you know.
And maybe I'm speaking out of turn. And if you don't want me to bring this up, but Doug's working on a new show that is pretty excited. Can you talk a little bit about that, or do you want to keep it under wraps?
No, it's fine. It's you know, with the internet now, I've created a show that's about being a good digital citizen, and it's going to have three songs and kind of a fantasy where the kids go into the computer, and there's some people that want to, you know, change Texas that are negative, and we're going to be positive. So that's kind of out there right now, and I'm working on that.
Oh, that's
you can't
amazing.
Keep creativity down.
No,
all the time. He's constantly working on something.
That's amazing. Well, and it seems like, I mean, I think it's time you realized your Broadway dream too, Doug, and you brought it to Broadway. Bring the new Zoo Review to Broadway.
I thought about
that's
that.
That's a good idea, actually.
But, you know, with all the songs that might be, it's funny you should say that because I did do a stage version for shopping centers, and it's back in the somewhere in my computer, and it's the stage show of New Zoo Review. And
dig it up.
I'm going to dig it up.
That would be amazing. I could totally, I mean, the reaction that we're getting even just now, but also, I mean, the numbers of people that you had watching when you went live, you talked about coming on and starting a Facebook page, but you've had tens of thousands of people tuning into your Facebook lives whenever you guys go live, right?
Yes, we have. And this was all new to us too. I mean, it really was, but it's been wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for me, because I've had to pick up my guitar, relearn all the songs I composed. I had to relearn how to play the guitar. It's been so long, but it's been fun.
Know what our daughter's going to do.
Yeah.
The other day we were invited, or Deb was invited, and then they invited me to go speak to a class at our local high school and join the class. It's great. It's going to be the three of us. And by golly, she whips out that phone. And I said, don't take any pictures.
Yeah.
The next thing I know, it's on Facebook where she did something.
But that was fun. And that was really fun because it was a class of mentors. Mm-hmm. They go, these like 30 kids go out to elementary schools a couple times a week, and they just talk to
kids, and it's a mentoring.
You just talk to program. Kids.
So, every school should have it. It's just
so the teacher had us because he wanted to show the kids what can happen, and it was great because I did a highlight reel of little things from the show and showed the kids, and they were like, you know, it was fun doing it for high school kids.
Yeah, that was amazing because we didn't know. Were they going to turn up their nose at these clips and think, oh, they're so old? But the response was really
It's amazing. It's amazing. The power of music.
Yeah. But it was mainly, we were there just to encourage these high school students. Yeah. And I think every school should have this program. It's just wonderful.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous. Tell us about when you went to Comic-Con last year. That must have been
a
wild ride.
Boy. We had no idea what Comic-Con was.
Yeah.
No idea whatsoever. I imagine both of you have been there.
We haven't because it's always on Nancy's birthday. So every year we're like, but one of these years we're going to go.
It's huge. And it's on steroids because I'm in costumes, and it's overwhelming, really. But it was fun. We greatly enjoyed it. We had a wonderful driver. We got to know him really well.
Yeah.
And learned all about his family history, and I wish we could stay in touch with him.
But first of all, we were fortunate we got to bring Freddy the Frog, because I thought, wait a minute, this is our first appearance in 40, 50 years. they're not going to recognize us, but they're going to see a green frog. And sure enough, it was like a magnet. All the kids, some of the people that were working couldn't make it because they were working at their booth. So somehow we got invited back for a third day. And all of those kids came and we took pictures and signed autographs. And it was just the start of something so wonderful.
To have been away, that was the first appearance that we did, to have been away from it for so long. And then all, it's just overwhelming. There are just people coming and people coming and people coming. And you want to meet with the, you want to hug each one. And, oh, one man came up and he had tears in his eyes. And I went over and I said, don't cry or I'm going to cry. And then I just gave him a hug. And he said, I'm crying because my mother passed away. And I remember always watching your show, sitting on her lap. And we had never thought about that, that something had touched a memory. It wasn't Doug and me, wasn't even the show. It was just the memory of sitting on his mother's lap. So it was just, that's just one example. I mean,
beautiful. What were you going to say, Doug?
No, I was just going to say that so many people came up. The one teacher came up three times.
Yes, with the chemistry teacher.
Mike, the chemistry
teacher. Yes, we met a chemistry teacher. He's one of our new zoo kids.
He just couldn't get enough, and I just love that.
You know, periodically, you know, on that Facebook page, you can comment, but you can also leave a message. It's a private message that we see. And periodically, Mike, the chemistry teacher, will send us a message. I think one last time was over who you were rooting for in the Super Bowl or something.
Yeah, something like that. But it was, like I said, we almost were surrogate parents in a way, you know, or aunts or uncles, where kids felt comfortable around us. We weren't going to be judgmental. We weren't going to, you know, we were just going to be ourselves. And then the characters were themselves. They could lose their tempers. They could be who they were. And we all need to be who we are. Mm-hmm. And that, you know.
And I honestly, Doug was ready to come back in a heartbeat. Me, not so much. But I feel like if we have an opportunity now at this stage of our life to encourage children, people's grandchildren, and get those messages out there of, I mean, that's something that can change the world. It can certainly change communities. The more people that, no matter what, you know, we can all believe different things, think different things, do different things, but if we just can be kind and respectful of each other, it would make such a difference. So I guess I can say that I'm very, very thankful to our daughter that we have that opportunity now.
Well, and when you think about it, the subjects we covered, they're still relevant today. I mean, we didn't know they were going to be, but they are. They're universal, evergreen. You know, isn't telling the truth evergreen? Isn't, you know, all of these things that we covered, they're still relevant today. And I think that's a big deal for, you know, launching it again, I think, because those values still hold up.
Oh, definitely. More than ever, I think we need it. I wanted to say Lisa Vold left a comment and she said, you are the only ones talking to us, not at us, which I think is beautiful. And one question I had that Cindy Yarborough Hearthcote had that we had a similar question, which is, what was your favorite season or episode of the show? Or is it, that might be hard to pinpoint, but what are your favorite memories of working on the show, especially working together?
I for me, it was, you know, doing the songs. I mean, that just every day was just exciting because I got to hear the music played back to the soundstage. We were acting, we were dancing, you know, even if it was with a hippo and an owl and a frog, that I was living a dream, you know, And I think you were too, really.
Well, I think, I don't know why everybody else goes into acting, but I know why I went into acting. Because you get to pretend you're someone else. You get to wear pretty costumes. You get to, it's a fantasy. And so for me, New Zoo was a wonderful fantasy. I've told you, my favorite moments are those scenes in Henrietta's house. Henrietta was almost real to me. I know that sounds silly, but she was.
I have to brag on Aunt Me Jo because we had cue cards everywhere because I couldn't remember the lines. And we had to also remember the words of the song as we were lip syncing. But she had everything memorized. I mean, all the scripts, the songs, and she was a true thespian.
Nancy can understand that, can't you, Nancy? I didn't know how to use cue cards. I was afraid to use cue cards. I thought they're going to see that I'm not looking in the right place. So, boy, I knew every single line.
Yeah, she did. She did.
That's amazing. We've talked an awful lot about how you've helped children. And I have one question for you, for the adults watching. Is you've been married, by my calculations, you got married a year before the show premiered. So that makes 50 plus something years of marriage, right? So what's the secret?
How it's Christmas. It'll be 53 years.
It seems like you still love and respect each other. It exudes out of you. You can tell. So what's the secret?
I'll tell you, how do you make things last? You give everybody their space, their time, and you just laugh. You have fun. I mean, if you don't have fun, you're in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. And so it's just been, you know, mutual respect and love.
And you have to, I think, from this, my vaunted vantage points of being
53
so,
years.
So old now, is that it's important to forgive. You know, you have to just hang in there and forgive each other and never, ever go to bed angry. And Doug and I have a habit that every night, before we go to sleep, we always pray together. We say our prayers,
yeah.
And we keep our sense of humor.
You just have to
kind of laugh our way through life, really. You know, but I think those things are really important, and never give up on each other. Because the longer you're married, you go through these transitions, and you become different people. Almost, don't you think?
Oh,
a little bit.
Yeah. So therefore, your tolerance level has to change, and your, the space that you give each other has to change, because, you know, you're not perfect. You're not going to be everything to everybody. And guess what? You can't change somebody.
No.
Unless they want to change. I used to tell my daughters this when they would bring somebody home. And they would say to us, well, I think I could change him, Mom. I mean, I know he's this way now, but I think I can, I think he'll be a different person. And I was like, you know, that's who he is.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, you got to recognize that, especially in any relationship.
And it's very, very important, speaking about daughters. And Doug was so good at this, and he always took the girls out. We have two girls and a boy now. Always take our girls out to talk to them before school. They go to McDonald's or something. But to marry someone who seriously wants you to become a better person and encourages you, that's especially, I think, important for girls, that they're married to somebody who says, is this your dream? Well, you go do it. We'll find a way to make it happen.
Exactly right. That's exactly right.
You don't want to marry somebody that's at all controlling.
Yeah.
But that's the subject for another day.
We'll have you back to talk about women's empowerment, because that's beautiful.
Listen, she invented women's empowerment.
Well, we would love to talk to you more about that, for sure, because that's important.
You're looking at somebody with a master's degree in marriage and family counseling, and she's helped a lot of women, I can tell you that.
Well, and you were such a positive role model for all of us when we were little girls. I mean, to see someone out there who is so cool and happy and just having a good time and, you know, and doing what she loved and dreamed about, whether we were conscious of what that was at mm-hmm. 6 years old or whether that just subconsciously influenced us. You've had a big impact on so many of us, you know.
Thank you. I'm very impressed with both of you. And I wish that we had time. I would like to interview you because I think you both had remarkable careers and then transitioned into this podcast. Yeah. And I would love to learn more about it. If we ever find ourselves in the same city, we want to take you to dinner.
We would love that. We will definitely stay in touch. We have one last question, and I don't want this to end, but we can't keep you all day. So we have one last question, which is, you've had such a positive influence on so many of us and really transformed our lives in such an important way. What's your dream for the little kids that are out there now? What's your dream for their future?
For those children is that they grow up confident in themselves with a strong sense of who they are and that they fill their world with kindness, that whatever they do, they in their professions as they grow up, that their main thing in life is to love and to be kind and to be gentle. They end up being a boss in a company, that they do that with respect and kindness. And just personally, I would hope that they have a strong faith in a good, gracious, loving God who will direct them on a good path.
And I can tell you, all of that is not easy because in today's culture with the internet and, you know, how easy it is to not follow that path, that's a hard thing to do. So I would pray that they would find a mentor, that they would mm-hmm. find people that they can look up to, whether it's a teacher or whoever. But I because sometimes it's not going to be their parents because maybe the parents aren't there or they're doing other things. But I think every kid needs somebody in his life that or her life that can they can look up to and that can say, oh, it doesn't have to be like this. I can do this. And that they have a choice and they have a choice to which way to go. And that to me is would be my dream, that they know they have a choice and they can make the right choice for them.
I can't think of a better way to wrap this up. That was absolutely beautiful. And we are so thrilled to have had you today. And we look forward to you coming to LA so we can have dinner together. And everybody out there, make sure you go to their Facebook page, New Zoo Review, and pop in questions and comments and let's bring them back. I don't know who we do a letter writing campaign to, but let's do a letter writing campaign.
We'll see you on Broadway.
Thank you both. We'll look forward to meeting you someday.
Yes.
Oh, we would love that. Thank you for everything you've ever taught us and done for us. We are so grateful to you both.
Well, we love you both.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Passionistas Project. Be sure to visit thepassionistasproject.com to sign up for your free membership to join our worldwide sisterhood where passion-driven women come to get support, find their purpose, and feel empowered to transform their lives and change the world. We'll be back next week with another Passionista who's defining success on her own terms and breaking down the barriers for herself and women everywhere. Until then, stay passionate.